I thought I'd take the opportunity to talk a little bit about Dogen, but mainly about what I'd say are a couple of the main themes which run through the whole of Dogen's teaching, specifically through the Shobigenzo, but other teachings as well. Dogen was born in 1200, and he was ordained quite young age. I think he was maybe 12, something like that. He joined the Tendai school of Buddhism. Their focus was on, one of the teachings he very much picked up on was the teaching that we're all Buddha from the beginning. And his question then was, well, if we're all Buddha from the beginning, why are we practicing? Why are we doing all this meditation? And it was that that led him to look for another tradition, and he went to a Rinzai Zen monastery and trained there for a number of years. And it was from there that he went over to China, because he still felt that his question wasn't answered. And it was whilst he was in China, staying at the monastery, which in Japanese is called Tendozan, with the monk who was the abbot there, Tendo Nyojo Juching, who became Dogen's teacher. It was while he was there that he had a deep insight into the nature of practice, the nature of life, the nature of existence, and his insight is what then informs the whole of his teaching after that. That yes, indeed, Buddha from the beginning, and where practice fits in is that practice isn't training to become Buddha; it's the very expression of Buddha. The practice of Buddhism is the manifesting of Buddha in the world. It's not training in order to reach a state in the future that's called enlightenment. It's because enlightenment exists and is here and now already that we can put that into practice. And the putting that into practice is living in a way that doesn't cause suffering, doesn't cause harm, and is based on meditation. That's what we call Buddhist practice. But actually, that's the life of Buddha. And so there's no distinction between Buddhist practice to become Buddha and Buddhist practice as the expression of Buddha. In some ways you could say it's a change of perspective, and it's that change of perspective that Dogen encourages in us, really. It's not to see ourselves as training in order to reach something way off in the future, but to see our training here and now as the very expression of Buddha, and in doing that, seeing the ways we go against that, and refraining from that, we come to appreciate more and more the life of Buddha that is here and now already, and we come to live that more fully and express this as a real thing in our life here and now, rather than it being an idea of something off in the future. But whilst we have an idea of it being off in the future, we'll pretty much always remain off in the future, because that's kind of how we're defining ourselves, as someone who is training in order to reach something in the future. So we define ourselves as always being on the path. And whilst Dogen doesn't deny that there is an ongoing unfolding, there is an aspect of path in that sense, nevertheless, if we only have that view of the unfolding, that view of the path, and don't have the other side of being Buddha from the beginning, then we're missing the true joy of this life being the expression of Buddha here and now, within all the not within the unfolding, more the other way around, that the unfolding happens within it fundamentally being Buddha here and now. And there are two main themes in Dogen's practice that relate to this, which I'd like to talk a bit about. And the first one that crops up in many, many chapters of the Shobigenzo is the importance of actualizing the teaching, of the importance of acting as Buddha, living as Buddha, making the practice real in our lives. And what Dogen's getting at there is that it's not enough to sit in meditation and think that we have understood what Buddha is, and then when we get up from meditation, not put it into practice in our lives. Because the whole point of Buddha, whatever we understand that is, or the state of enlightenment, whatever we understand that is that it's expressed in our life. If it's not expressed in our life, it's just an idea. The life of Buddha has to be lived to be the life of Buddha. It's not a description in a book. It's not a concept. It's not a theory. However much we understand about it, the true measure of the depth of our understanding is the extent to which we actually live it, the extent to which we actually put it into practice in our lives. And as I say, there are a number of chapters in the Shopakenzo where Dogen very, very strongly and very definitely emphasises this aspect of the teaching and of the practice. Genjo Koan, for example, one of the most important chapters of the Shopakenzo, in one of the recent translations in the Tanahashi edition of Shopakenzo, that chapter title is translated as Actualizing the Fundamental Point. You could perhaps say actualizing that which is fundamental, actualizing the fundamental thing, the fundamental reality of being Buddha. I also kind of like to think about it the other way around. It's the fundamental point of actualizing. Dogen is saying that this aspect of actualizing is absolutely fundamental to the whole practice. Without it, we really don't understand the practice. Without it, it's a hobby or a theory about something or a concept. And so this is really a challenge to any of us if we think that our meditation is very, very deep, but then we find everything in life annoying, irritating, then that's just kind of prodding us in the ribs and saying, well, if you're not expressing it in your daily life, how much do you really understand it? Because if it isn't lived, if it isn't made real, it's just an intellectual understanding about something rather than actually living the full expression of it, living the reality of it. And Dogen comes back to that again and again. I think he makes it very explicit in the way that at the end of the Genjo Koan, he retells a koan story of the monk with the fan. You're probably familiar with this one. I've mentioned it before in the past. I'll just read that and then try and describe why that brings out this aspect. I've got two versions here. And this is again from the Tanahashi translation. Zen Master Baoche of Mount Mayu was fanning himself. A monk approached and said, "Master, the nature of wind is permanent and there is no place it does not reach. Why then do you fan yourself?" And just to decode that before we go any further, this is about the understanding within and the expression of the understanding, exactly the thing Dogen's pointing about, the actualization. The nature of wind is permanent. There's no place it doesn't reach. Apparently, in Chinese or Japanese, it was written in the character. There's just one character, which means both wind and air. So he's saying the wind's everywhere already, or the air's everywhere already. Why do you need to make an action of making the wind? Because the wind's everywhere. It's like saying, it's enough to sit in meditation and to be Buddha. We don't actually have to live it and express it. So the monk's question is kind of, you know, if we are Buddha, why do we need to express it? It's just enough to be Buddha. And the master replies, although you understand that the nature of wind is permanent, it's universal, it abides everywhere, you do not understand the reality of its reaching everywhere. So although you understand it's permanent, you don't understand the reality of its reaching everywhere. Although the monk understands the nature of sitting still within meditation and knowing the Buddha mind within, the nature of wind is permanent, but Buddha is universal, but Buddha is everywhere. You don't understand the meaning of its actually reaching everywhere, of its circulating everywhere. And the reality of it circulating everywhere is shown in action, expressing Buddha in our lives. And the monk asks, well, what is the meaning or the reality of its reaching everywhere? And the master just kept fanning himself. Because the question then is, okay, there's the understanding of Buddha mind, but how is Buddha mind put into practice? And the only answer to that is to show the practice of Buddha, which is to keep, in the analogy of the wind and the air, is just to keep on fanning. It's not to describe how you fan, because to describe how you move the air by using the fan is again just to have a concept of it. It's just a description of it, which is another thing to get lost in and think we understand. So words aren't enough. Words are no good there. We have to actually show an instance of what living the life of Buddha is, which in the analogy of the wind and the fan is simply to use the fan. And the monk bows deeply. It doesn't say whether he actually understood or not, but the monk bows deeply. Now, in the story, the master says, although you understand the nature of wind is permanent, you don't understand the meaning of its reaching everywhere. So he's saying, yes, you do understand the sitting still within Buddha and the aspect of being Buddha, but you don't understand putting it into practice. Dogen's actually much more strict with this. He says, the actualization of the Buddha Dharma, the vital part of its correct transmission, is like this. If you say that you do not need to fan yourself because the nature of air or wind is permanent and that you can have wind without fanning, then you don't understand either permanence or the nature of the wind. So he's not going along with the master saying, yes, you do understand the true nature. What Dogen is saying is that if you think you understand the true nature but don't understand its expression and the fact that it needs to be lived in order to be real, then not only do you not understand the expression, you really don't understand the nature of Buddha nature, the nature of true nature, because not the whole point of it, but it's inherent within it that it has to be lived and expressed. It's not a knowledge about something. And so this teaching of actualizing is something that's absolutely fundamental in Dogen's teaching, that if you don't understand that the Buddha has to be lived, then what is your understanding of what Dogen's saying? It's just an intellectual, conceptual idea of how one might live, which, you know, might be better than not having it, but it's not the same as actually living it, putting it into practice. And then Dogen finishes off saying, and this is right at the very end of the Genjo Koan, the nature of wind is permanent. Because of that, the wind of the Buddha's house brings forth the gold of the earth and makes fragrant the cream of the long river. So we have a land flowing with milk and honey as a result of actually expressing Buddha, living Buddha, and that's the fruits of training, if you like. That's what he's pointing to, that the fruits of training come not through understanding what an idea of what Buddha is about, but actually living it. And it's only when we actually live it that the fruits of training come to us. There's another chapter that's called, in many translations, it's called something like the Dignified Behaviour of Active Buddha. This is Ta-Nehisi translation again. And here it's called The Awesome Presence of Active Buddhas. But again, it's this aspect of active Buddhas, not just understanding about Buddhas, but actively living as Buddha. Buddhas at all times practice complete awesome presence, thus they are active Buddhas. Because active Buddhas manifest awesome presence in every situation, they bring forth awesome presence with their body. That's presence, P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E. Thus their transformative function flows out in their speech, reaching throughout time, space, Buddhas and activities. Without being an active Buddha, you cannot be liberated from bondage to Buddha and bondage to Dharma, and you will be pulled into the cult of Buddha demons and Dharma demons. So it's kind of strong words. Without being an active Buddha, you can't be liberated from bondage to Buddha and bondage to Dharma. And he's talking about bondage to the idea of Buddha, bondage to the idea of Dharma. And he goes on to say it more explicitly. Bondage to Buddha means being bound by the view that our perception and cognition of enlightenment is actually enlightenment. Experiencing such views even for a moment, you cannot expect to meet liberation, and you will remain mistaken. Seeing enlightenment as nothing but enlightenment may appear as a view that corresponds to enlightenment. Who would imagine calling it a crooked view? But this is like tying yourself up without a rope, becoming further and further bound up. The tree you are tied to will not topple, and the wisteria vine binding you will not wither. In vain you struggle inside a pit in the vicinity of Buddha without seeing this as a sickness of the Dharma body or as a trap of the reward body. Active Buddhas are never bound by such ties. So I think there he's really reinforcing that idea that if we think that our concept of Buddha or our concept of enlightenment actually is enlightenment, then we're always going to be missing it. We're always bound by that view that what we're thinking is the important thing. And he's pointing us beyond that to liberate ourselves from the ideas that we have about enlightenment, which in another chapter, Only a Buddha Together with a Buddha, Dogen says that the thoughts we have about enlightenment, prior to enlightenment, the thoughts that we have about enlightenment are no help to enlightenment. When we reach enlightenment, we never say, oh, that's just as I imagined it, because it never is. And he says even if we do say that, actually we're mistaken, it's not as we imagined it. How can our confused minds, whilst we're in confusion, imagine what it's like to be beyond confusion, to be liberated from confusion? So that I think is the same thing he's saying here, that to be in bondage to Buddha is to be stuck with believing that our ideas about Buddha are what it means to be Buddha. That we've got a fully worked out concept of what enlightenment is, and that's actually the aim, is to completely understand what enlightenment is. It's to live enlightenment, to live Buddha, to be Buddha, and that's so even if we don't have a fully formed conceptual idea of what it means. And earlier in the Genjo Koan, Dogen says something along the lines of, Buddhas are fully Buddhas even if they don't realise they are Buddhas. It's not that they're ignorant of what they're doing, it's just they don't categorise it as Buddha and don't have a an intellectual concept of what it means to be Buddha. It's simply living in a way that expresses that life of Buddha. Living in a way that actualizes the refraining from causing harm, the refraining from causing suffering, actualizes the life of the precepts. But how do we come to this actualization? How do we, starting off from where we start off from, not fully understanding it, not fully expressing it, being confused to some extent, wanting to know Buddha, understanding something about it, but still in our lives being annoyed by things, being irritated, getting angry, feeling despairing, anxious, worrying, all these sorts of things. How do we come to the understanding and the actualization that is the life of Buddha? And this is the second theme. I'm sure that there are many themes you could talk about that run through a work as enormous as Shopagenzo and Buddha's other and Dogen's other teachings. But I think the other one I'd like to talk about this morning is what it is that leads us to that understanding of action, of active Buddha. And of course it's the practice of meditation. That's the other thing that Dogen stresses very, very strongly in so many chapters of the Shobogenzo, in Fukan Zazengi, and in many of his other teachings. And to sit in meditation, as he describes it in Fukan Zazengi, is, in our translation, neither trying to think nor trying not to think. It's not engaging in the action of deliberately thinking. It's also not engaging in the action of suppressing thoughts. When thoughts, feelings, emotions arise, we don't try and keep them at bay. There's a refraining from intervening. We don't intervene to try and push them away. We don't intervene to try and pull them towards us. Or at least that's the aspiration. When we sit in meditation, often we see that there are thoughts arising, emotions, feelings that we're actually finding rather difficult, and there's a part of us which actually would rather them just go away, and so we have this tendency to push things away when they feel uncomfortable. But just to notice that we're doing that, and as much as we're able to refrain from doing that. And similarly, if meditation, our experience of meditation seems to be quite quiet and peaceful and blissful for even a small moment, we tend to want that to carry on. And so, you know, even though we realise that we can't grasp and hold on to that, there's a bit of it of us that we notice actually is doing that. And so again, just to notice that we're doing that, to refrain from that as much as we can. So it's refraining from the action of pushing away, refraining from the action of pulling towards us, refraining from the action of deliberately thinking, refraining from the action of suppressing thoughts. And that's why the meditation is described as just sitting. It's not just sitting doing something. It's refraining from the whole area of doing things. And it's that approach, the basis of meditation, which opens up to us what the heart of the actualizing is. So the teaching of the actualizing Buddha, you could say, is the teaching of action, the area of action, the practice of action. Meditation is very much the area of non-action. And it's these two themes of action and non-action, both together, both supporting each other, both an expression of Buddha, which seem paradoxical, but actually run together throughout Buddhist practice and certainly throughout Dogen's teachings. And in the, you know, one of the takeaways that we describe the action side, what it means to live the life of Buddha, is the teaching of the precepts, is to live by the precepts, to live in a way that we cease from causing harm, that we do good for beings, that we don't kill, don't steal, refrain from all those actions that cause suffering. In Dogen's, in the Shoshogi, there's a section where Dogen has been talking about the precepts, and then he ends it up with a section which is often quoted on its own. Within these precepts dwell the Buddhas, enfolding all things within their unparalleled wisdom. There is no distinction between subject and object for any who dwell herein. All things, earth, trees, wooden posts, bricks and stones, become Buddhas once this refuge is taken. From these precepts come forth such a wind and fire that all are driven into enlightenment when the flames are fanned by the Buddha's influence. This is the merit of non-action and non-seeking, the awakening of true wisdom. And I think in that context, you could say there are a number of different ways you could understand non-action. In the realm of action, non-action is to refrain from acting based on our own selfish views, opinions. It's to act in a different way in the world. And at the same time, you could say, what then is that action based on? It's based on the understanding of non-action. It's based on the absolutely crucial relationship with thoughts, feelings, emotions that we come to know more clearly by not getting tangled with them, by not trying to push them away or pulling them towards us, by not trying to keep them going, not trying to suppress them, just allowing them to be as they are, not giving rise to an action in relation to them, just allowing them to be there, and allowing us ourselves to come to know them more clearly, come to see them more as they actually are. And as we come to see how they actually are, we begin to see more how they influence my actions. They drive me to behave in all sorts of ways. And we can't come to that understanding, or at least not to the same depth and certainly not as easily, by just thinking about it. We have to refrain from the action side of things and be willing to sit in non-action. And I think the word non-action, although the action and non-action, it can seem paradoxical that they're both there together within the practice. Non-action in that sense isn't meant to be an opposite to action, in the same way that in the dialogue that Dogen quotes in Fukan Zazengi, the monk who's sitting in meditation is asked what he's thinking about, and he says, "Thinking, not thinking." And he's asked again, "Well, how do you think, not thinking?" "Non-thinking." And it's the non-thinking which is not suppressing thoughts or indulging in thoughts. It's that what's going on with the thoughts isn't actually the important thing. There's a different focus. In the same way, non-action is not an opposite to action. We might think of inaction as an opposite to action. Inaction, the word inaction tends to convey that actually there's something I should be doing, but because I'm lazy or irresponsible or whatever, I'm stuck in inaction, I'm not doing the thing that I should be doing. Non-action isn't talking about that at all. It's much more that when we sit in meditation, we are willing of our own volition to let go of volition, actually, in the meditation. Let go of trying to do something, let go of trying to bring something about. And later on in Fukan Zazengi, Dogen says, "The means of training are thousandfold, but pure meditation must be done. The means of training are thousandfold is all the infinite ways in which we can put into practice active Buddha in our life." And that's absolutely crucial, and without that, we don't express the living Buddha, the active Buddha. And pure meditation must be done. That without the non-action side, we don't really come to see what is the heart of action, what is the heart of acting Buddha.